So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to manufacture this feeling of I can do this. I want to get this done now. And I'm going to see what I need to do with Stan to make that happen quicker.
You're stepping into the ring with two guys who pull no punches. This is Entrepreneur Showdown.
Happy Monday morning, guys. It's Entrepreneur Showdown podcast time. I'm Dan Franks. My man, Joe Cassandra, he'll be joining me in just a moment. And you found the place where Joe and I, we're not scared to debate the hottest topics in entrepreneurship. We don't pull any punches, even with our big name entrepreneurial guests, like Stan Smith today from Pushing Social. We'll be welcoming him on in the main event. And he'll get to step in the ring with us and find out what the showdown's all about. But before that, don't forget to check out entrepreneurshowdown.com for the show notes of today's episode. And if you like what we're doing, if you like our style, our swag, visit us at showdownlove.com and tell us just how much you love the showdown. But with that, let's get on to round one.
Round one.
Right now, to kick things off, Joe and I are looking at an article by Daryl Henley at epiclaunch.com, and it's interesting, and it's called Why a Learn-As-You-Go Mentality is Key to Entrepreneurial Success. And this is pretty interesting to me because a lot of people spend a lot of time researching topics or researching their startups ideas or validating their ideas and all these things that they do to try to maybe prove that they either know what they're doing before they start or something like that. And this whole article is saying why maybe you should just dive in, you know, feet first or head first and just jump in the water and get going and just kind of accept ahead of time that you're going to make mistakes in whatever it is that you're going into, but you're going to use these mistakes as lessons and not necessarily view them as failures. So to me, this is something that I kind of tend to agree with, and we've talked about similar things before, but how do you feel about just this article as a whole?
For me, it's somewhat how do you learn stuff? See, I'm a very hands-on learner. If you show me a presentation of how something's supposed to be done, I'm not gonna soak in any of it. So I actually have to get in and start making mistakes and whatnot, and that's gonna formulate in my head and stay there. While some people, they can just read a book about something and they can go and implement it right away. And maybe he's not going in this direction, but I feel like you need to have that hands-on approach where you're not afraid to have to look around and search for the answers yourselves before looking to someone else for the answer. And I think what makes a good team is that you have people who are all willing to do that. They're all willing to go and make mistakes and then be patient with other people as they're making their mistakes so that they can learn. And that's the only way people, I guess, if that's how you learn, that's the only way we're going to learn. So we're our own group of people. Are you that type? Or can you read or watch a presentation about something and remember it and learn how to do it?
Well, and I think that's kind of what Daryl is implying, is that you can absolutely do, like you said, read a book, learn these lessons from these so-called experts, and then go and implement those strategies that you learned. But he's saying that that's not the best way to do it. So even the people that think that that's how they do it best and that's the right way to do it, what he's saying is maybe it's not. Because when you do that, you're following someone else's success. And that's his exact quote, is the danger of following someone else's success. And he basically says, okay, so this person that you're learning from, they did it and it worked. But who's to say that if you do it your own way in a style that suits you best, that you're not going to do it better? And he thinks a lot of people get stuck in this trap of looking at how other people have done things and trying to mimic that because of their success. When in reality, if you tried it your own way, made a few mistakes along the way, but your method of perfecting whatever that is could end up much better in the end. But you'll never know that if you're just kind of sticking to other people's parameters.
So what about all those, since we're in the online space right now, all those courses that say, hey, here's what I did to get 1 million visitors a month, and I'm going to show it to you for $197.
Well, people want the easy way out. That's exactly what it is. It's, hey, I won't have to spend all the time learning how to do something. you know, the hard way by making the mistakes and by testing and failing and split testing things and looking at all these things. I don't have to do that. I can just see what Joe Blow did. And for $197, I can make $197,000 in the next year. Why wouldn't I do that? So, I mean, that's why they do it, because it's easy.
But isn't that, that's just you're paying for convenience. Does that mean it's a bad thing because you're doing that?
I don't think Daryl, and I agree with Daryl here, it's not a bad thing, but it might not be the best thing. So yes, you're paying for convenience and you're paying for what supposedly is a proven system or a proven concept, but that doesn't mean it's the best. So I guess if you're accepting that you might be limiting your potential by fitting into someone else's mold, then I guess as long as everything's out on the table and you're clear with that being the situation, then sure, I guess that's okay. But I don't think anyone listening to our show is that kind type of person where they just are looking for the easy way, knowing that it might not be the best.
Well, I'm just thinking of most larger companies, even the more, quote, innovative ones. I mean, they hire consultants for certain things. They're not... Maybe if it's something that you don't really want to do... I guess this goes to outsourcing as well, is if it's something you don't want to do, should you just hire someone to basically do it for you or tell you exactly how to do it without you having to waste a lot of time on it and instead be able to focus your time? Is he saying anything about maybe sometimes you just need to save some time somewhere and cut corners, for lack of better words?
I think you're throwing another situation into this that maybe he's not considering, and that's the big business or the bigger businesses. And I think naturally the bigger a business gets, the more people are involved, the less dynamic it's going to get, because you are going to have training sessions too. When you hire people into your company, you're going to have generic training sessions, and sure, you can do things to encourage creativity, but you don't want to hire on a large staff and tell them all, okay, go start failing, and then hopefully something good comes up from it. Now, you or I, as an entrepreneur, when we're doing something, we can put trust in ourselves that whatever we're doing, we're going to accept failure, but then we know inherently that we're going to learn from those failures and adapt. When you're starting to put this trust and this empowerment to all these other people, then you start having to be a little more critical and a little more careful who you're giving this, you know, this leeway to. And there are still large companies that do just kind of throw people out there and tell them to make things happen on their own. And I think Daryl would be supportive of that. But once you start putting more people into the room at the same time, you start needing to be a little more cautious at the very least.
Well, let's talk about if say you don't have that learn as you go mentality, because maybe you are one of those people, you don't want to be making mistakes in front of other people. You want to seem nice and polished all the time. What can they do to kind of get into that learn as you go mentality? Is it basically okay, forget about what other people are what other people think, if they think you're an idiot or anything like that, don't be afraid to ask questions. What's the answer to that?
I mean, to me, it's just a mindset shift. And you know how you and I somewhat hate talking just about mindset things. But I really think in this situation, you can't view whatever these mistakes you're making as failures. You really do have to embrace them as learning experiences. So you have two options, I guess. You can buy that $197 course that tells you exactly how to do things so you won't have any failures, when in reality you probably will still fail somewhere along the way. Or you can just get the very basic knowledge, wherever that might come from, observing others, and at least point yourself in the right direction, and then accept that, okay, my lessons are not going to come from that $197 course, but they're going to come from small failures along the way that I'm going to learn from. And you know, call it learning the hard way, but to me I'm calling it learning the more productive way, because then you're boots on the ground, you're in the trenches, and you're getting experience in addition to the learning. Because look, you and I, we just spent an extended weekend at New Media Expo, and I can't tell you how many people I met on the podcasting track who said, oh, you know, I took Cliff Ravenscraft A to Z course 3 years ago. And I said, oh, cool. What's your podcast? Oh, I haven't started. You know, that's what I'm here. I'm trying to get some ideas and get motivation. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. They paid Cliff thousands of dollars to teach him how to podcast. And 3 years later, they don't have one. You or I, we didn't. We looked at some free courses from Pat and from Cliff. And then we just jumped in. And did we make mistakes? Yes. Did we learn from them? Absolutely. Do I feel like we're more advanced than those people that bought the course and haven't done jack crap? You bet I do. I mean, we're talking right now.
So you're saying they wasted their money pretty much? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, you know, Cliff has a nice voice, so they might be able to go back and listen to the recordings over and over again. But yeah, I mean, if they paid $2,000 to learn how to podcast and they have yet to produce a podcast, I'd say they wasted their money. Whereas if they went in and tried to do it themselves, they either would have reached that failure very quickly and just not proceeded, and they wouldn't have had a podcast, but they wouldn't have been out the thousands of dollars. You know, so to me, there's no contest to me between which one is the right and wrong way in my eyes.
So basically get out of the analytical stage where you're analyzing everything and trying to find which person does it the best and I need to follow that person, and just start doing something small right now. If it is a podcast, then find five guests or find five major topics you're going to talk about if you're doing a solo show or a co-host show, and just brainstorm on those ideas. Just start with something small, and some of those ideas are going to be stupid, and it's fine. So there's not a magic pill out there, and people are going to try and sell you a magic pill that this is how they did it. But remember, especially with internet stuff, there's always cobwebs in the closet that you're never going to see, that hey, maybe they knew this one person that is what propelled them, or maybe they got lucky and something happened and you're not going to have that same type of luck. So it's pretty much get out of the analytical and hoping that, because I have this sometimes too. I'm always thinking, well, maybe this tactic will be the one that works, or maybe that tactic. And it's always just a pursuit and you're just pursuing in a circle, and you never just say, hey, I just need to figure this out myself, do some testing, figure out what's working, what's not. And don't be afraid to, I guess, waste time making mistakes as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you just said maybe one of these two tactics would work, well, perfect, there you go. Try them each. Split test them, go do them, and you'll find out a lot quicker trying them than you will sitting back and wondering about them for a long time. That's what I think. That's what Daryl thinks. Joe, I think that's what you think as well, so maybe you can be right on this one as well, like Daryl and I. Well, that's it for round one, but now we're going to take you on to round two.
Round two.
In round two to Jay, Joe and I are going to talk about a blog post from Stan Smith from pushingsocial.com. And Stan, I guess we can call him a repeat guest, so to speak, on the Entrepreneur Showdown, because we've covered a round one topic of Stan's before about finding your first 100 readers to your blog post or to your blog itself. But today, this blog post we're going to talk about will lead into the main event where Stan Smith is going to come on. And it's called Five Traits of Successful Blog Marketers. And I think he actually says extremely successful blog marketers, which, first of all, as a blog marketer himself, he knows that's going to catch the attention of a lot of the readers. And just to give a little background, I think pushing social really is about using your blog to then leverage social media and leverage whatever your brand or your products or your coaching strategy is. So he really is kind of a blogger's blogger, and he has all kinds of services that he provides that we'll get into in the main event. But first of all, let's just run down really quick these five successful traits. And then, Joe, we can kind of dive into whichever ones you think are interesting. But he says curiosity, courage, patience, being systematic, and having resilience. So those are those five successful traits. And he feels like any traits that they also need to have are kind of built off of any of those. So those are the five key ones. Which one of those stuck out to you the most?
Well, one that I've heard a lot recently is courage, because since everyone's trying to put out blog posts nowadays, you got to find a way to differentiate yourself. And one thing that you do that I've heard is you basically like expose yourself. So you show your vulnerabilities, and that's scary to do because you're usually telling a story that maybe you don't want a lot of other people to hear. And so, but those kind of stories resonate with people, and we've seen like James Altucher do it, and I know Srini's starting to do it on his Facebook page. Just basically opening up to your audience, not doing these generic type articles, but actually doing something that when you push publish, that you're actually going to be nervous about what other people think of you. And that'll automatically stand out, because a lot of people, they think about, when they think about viral posts, they always usually see like a lot of list posts and whatnot. And that's great probably for traffic. But when you want to actually start capturing readers, they want to be able to connect with you in a certain way. And it's probably having that courage to publish those posts that maybe you didn't want to before, that is probably going to have them trust you more and subscribe to your list.
Yeah, and it's interesting you brought up the courage one, because just reading through some of the comments on this post, that's the one that everyone was kind of keying in on. And I know that like James Altucher and Shrini and some of these guys, their courage is through vulnerability. And you even, I think, mentioned that at the very beginning, that kind of not being afraid to expose yourself or expose your flaws or prior failures or anything like that. But I'm not so sure, and we can ask Stan this later, but I'm not so sure that that's what he means by courage. I think kind of that second half of what you said was more like it. Like, just because it's something that you're not sure is going to work, but if you want to publish that, then go ahead and publish it regardless of how it may or may not work. So I think that's a little different than being vulnerable. But at the same time, I think being vulnerable is kind of the trend that we're seeing a lot now, is kind of almost building up your, how would you say this, like your platform, or building up your, or like building up your credibility through showing your vulnerability, which is kind of, it's two differing stances. So like, hey, I'm going to tell you about all my failures, but then that's going to build up my credibility for you. And I think that's an interesting twist that we can ask Stan about. But since you kind of touched on it, do you think that's a trend that's going forward now, that maybe in the past people didn't want to expose their flaws or their weaknesses, but now maybe because of that trust you're going to build through it, that's almost a good thing to talk about all these things?
Well, I don't know about the credibility part. I mean, just because you, if you fail a lot and you expose those failures, you wouldn't expose them usually unless you have something that's successful at the moment, or else, like, why would you be writing anything if you're just failing at everything?
Well, but let me ask you this, because you're a big James Altucher guy. If he only talked about all his successes and he never talked about his failures, which his failures are a ton, you know, he's had a ton of failures, but his successes have just outweighed his failures. But if he didn't expose all these failures and his weaknesses and maybe some of the flaws he's had in the past, would he have as much credibility to you? Or would you think, okay, this guy's maybe hiding something, but actually because he's failed multiple times, you appreciate what he's saying more?
Well, no, he's credible because he's succeeding. That's the credible part, because he's made millions of dollars. The showing your failures is just is more his way of showing that he's human, and that like all these people like you see like on TV, that you see Mark Zuckerberg and all them, that they actually do fail. You just never see him. And he's saying, hey, here's the failures. This actually goes along. It's not, starting a company isn't all buyouts and $1 million paychecks. It's, there's going to be times where you're going to fall on your face and you won't hear all those. And but his credibility is in that he's already built something successful, even though, like you said, yeah, he has more failures than successes, but his credibility lies in those small successes, because that's, those small successes are worth millions of dollars that most people, that's what they're trying to go for, and they forget about the heap of failures.
Yeah, I can see that. I just feel like he's almost using those failures to build up his credibility more and you know, make what he's preaching more valuable, which I don't disagree with. I think if you're coming out and you're all roses and sunshine and all of this, then people are going to kind of be skeptical of you, because, you know, hey, this guy, certainly he's not completely perfect. Certainly there's something he can talk, he's had in the past. And since he's willing to expose that to us, then we can really take what he's saying for face value, because we know he's telling us the good with the bad. And I know a lot of people maybe aren't necessarily following that, but they're kind of leveraging that technique. They're talking about failures, which may or may not be true. But the whole reason for doing that is just to try to build that credibility. So I don't know. And I don't even know if that's completely making sense. But to me, I see that being more prevalent than it has in the past. And we'll ask Stan if that's a technique he uses or he recommends his students use, because he has a lot of coaching programs. But we talked about courage a ton here, and we kind of strayed a little away from Stan's meaning of courage, I think, and we'll harness that back in, and we'll talk about the other four traits as well when we get to Stan in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
Today's guest in the main event is a man who has worked for all kinds of companies at all different levels, but is now self-employed and working as a self-proclaimed business growth strategist. Stan Smith is the founder and managing director of Pushing Social, where he looks to teach his readers how to harness their personal and business power and voice to change their world. Stan blogs about all kinds of topics and has previously been featured in round one of the Entrepreneur Showdown. But today in round two of this episode, Joe and I discussed a recent post detailing the five traits of extremely successful blog marketers. Stan is an avid fisherman. He shares the name, but nothing more, with Stan Smith, the lead character of the American Dad cartoon. But whatever you do, do not call him Stanley.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So with that, Stan Smith, what's going on, Stan?
Hey, man. Hey, can I pay you for that intro? That rocked.
Take it, man. Take it. It's, yeah. It's all you. So I want to ask real quick, can you tell us why we are not allowed to call you Stanley? Explicitly, we're not allowed to call you Stanley, right?
Yeah, see, when I turned 16, I needed money to get my car. And so I went and worked for a delicatessen. And the whole summer, I was called Stanley. Stanley, go bust that table. Stanley, go get the pickle. Stanley, where's the cheesecake? So that just gives me nightmares. So that's the reason why you can't call me Stanley.
And that's not even your birth name, right?
No, it's Stanford. Yeah, yeah.
God, even more insulting. Wow. So, well, let's put it this way. Hopefully you're more successful at this point than the guy running the deli. So we'll go ahead and say that you won out of that deal.
Yeah,
still.
Yeah, I did.
Well, before we get started, we typically like, is there any place that we can send our listeners to, whether it's a website or a previous podcast you've been on, that really tells your backstory well?
No, I tell you what, you should just head on over to pushingsocial.com. I'll just make it easy on folks and go back to look at my archives all the way back to 2011 and see how I started off. It'll give you a good laugh. But yeah, go on over to my blog, hang out, leave a comment. That's the best way to get to know me.
Well, one of the things we typically ask is kind of what was the motivation for this specific post, but and maybe you can tell us differently, but for someone, you just mentioned you've been blogging for four plus years, so you've kind of you're into this content production mode, so maybe tell us, are all your blog posts, do they really have specific motivation for each one, or do you have like a specific, I guess, strategy for coming up with topics that maybe isn't the same as someone that's blogging once a month or a couple times a month?
Yeah. Well, my number one strategy is I'm trying to get, I think everybody's locked into this mode of getting as many readers and many new readers as you can, you know? So I really try to write blog posts that first of all are practical, and people who are not necessarily social media gurus will see them and kind of go, hey, you know what? I think this guy's talking my language. So that's the number one reason. But, you know, just to be frank, guys, I mean, like I do this full time. So I'm trying to nurture and create customers and create repeat readers and sharers of my content. So, you know, that's a lot of the motivation there. I want people to talk about these posts. So that happens and I'm a happy man.
Well, diving into this blog post and the five traits, let's just start right off with this first trait because it kind of relates to what we're just talking about. And that's, you say, you know, you need to find a source of interesting topics or that's one of the things to do.
Right.
And I know a lot of people maybe use polls to see what their audience is interested in,
right,
or, you know, ask open-ended questions. But what is your specific strategy, and maybe what are some of the strategies you teach your coaching students about how to use curiosity to come up with content or topics?
Right. I think the very first thing that I tell people to do is hunt out the hard questions, the difficult stuff that your audience is trying to learn about. So you have to be really intensely curious, not only about your subject, but how your readers are trying to go about understanding the subject. And that's the curiosity piece. So one of the favorite things I love to do is I love putting in Google searches for, you know, blog writing ? And see what comes up. You know, a lot of times I get forum questions, I get questions that are on Twitter, I get questions that are in blog posts or in comments. And I start from there because I want to know beyond, you know, how to write a great headline. I really want to understand what is holding people back, you know, and that is where my curiosity comes from. And quite frankly, all the better bloggers out there, they are really good at speaking the language and understanding what their readers are really wrestling with. And they really get down deep on that. You can give polls a try, and I like to use polls, but I oftentimes find that if I can just start reading comments and get into forums and seeing what really people are asking questions about, that's the best material for me.
Well, you were talking about focusing on your audience, and we've talked about how people need to niche down a lot more. Can you tell us your specific audience that you target?
Sure. I target women from the age of 35 to 55 who have their own business, they're solopreneurs, and they hate to write.
And can you dive into where that came from? Because I'm reading this, and it seems like it'd be a good post for me, but I'm not your audience. So
right. We're not the right gender or the right age, Dan. Something wrong with us?
Is there a feminine side to me that I'm missing out
on? Don't answer that question, Stan, if you don't want to. That might get a little too personal.
Hey, listen, if the pumps fit, wear them, you know? But listen, I think that... For me, I found that when I looked at my audience and I look at all the people that over time seem to resonate and take action, it's that specific group of people. Okay. And there's certain traits about those folks that resonate with guys, obviously. If you're trying to run your own business or thinking about running your own business, you have no time, you don't like to write, then you're going to find some things that make sense for you. And you're going to, you know, a lot of my topics are going to resonate with you. But when I put that picture up, or when I have that picture in my mind of who I'm trying to talk to, then that's this very specific person that I'm trying to go after. So I'm not trying to like tell them a lot of, you know, telling them how to code or very, you know, sophisticated topics, because they don't have time for that. I understand that they probably don't have a lot of money in their business and they're trying to make money. So, I mean, like that specific persona is very important. What I was saying is that, and, you know, I have a fair amount of guys, you know, that come onto my my blog, and I can service, you know, I give them what they need as well. But I think it's important to, you said at first, to niche down, and that's where I niche down to.
Stan, I just wanted to ask real quick, do you think this is an issue of the women are a lot more likely to get involved with the interaction and the men sit on the sidelines?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, women, when they come to the blog, if they like it, they're going to tell somebody about it. A lot of time, guys are really practical, and they read something and they go off and they start putting it into action, or they'll come to a judgment about if this will work for them or not. And really, for where I am at my growth, I want people to talk, you know, and my female readers, they've done good by me. They see something, they write, they send me an email, they become clients, and that's worked out really well.
So you say this focusing on the woman took a little bit of time. So what did you start with then? Did you just start with any type of business owner before you realized that it's women that I'm going to start targeting?
Yeah, you know, my initial audience was social media managers or community managers at Fortune 500 companies. That was my initial focus. And I quickly found that, first of all, those folks, to get to those folks, they don't necessarily, they're reading blogs, but they're not giving it the respect or the attention that you really need. They were reading Harvard Business Review, or they were reading Mashable or Fast Company, you know, so getting all the way down to pushing social, that was just going to be a hard thing for me. And a lot of the topics that I thought that I could write for those folks were so theoretical that it just didn't feel like something I wanted to talk about. You know, I'd spent 15 years as a strategist in Madison Avenue advertising agency, so I knew that language, but I just didn't want to, you know, blog about that. So I really quickly started to adjust my audience to get down to that very specific person that I feel like I resonated with.
Well, you say that a lot of your posts, you're trying to gain customers in a certain way. That's how you make your livelihood. So just on this post, is there something maybe between the lines that are cultivating some psychological thing that's wanting me to become a customer.
Oh, can I jump in here? There was one part where you mentioned that you need a coach.
Yep.
And I read that part.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. See, this entire post has one real goal here, is to get a person to a point where they have the motivation to take action. Okay, so from the very beginning, I'm telling them that number one, and I believe this, but number one, they have to be curious. And I say that if you have this curiosity, then you are in the right spot. Okay, you have what it takes. The second thing is courage. And I find that courage is one of those things where people are afraid to write. Remember my audience I'm going after, they're afraid to write. And what they do is that they spend years trying to avoid that. And I'm just trying to get them over that hump and saying, listen, do it anyway. You know, so by the time you get down to this area where I'm saying being systematic and kind of going about building your blog in a methodical way, I just throw in a very quick, discreet piece, which is, if you don't know how to make this happen for you, get a coach. Okay, then I get right back on script, you know, for the rest of the post. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to manufacture this feeling of, I can do this, I want to get this done now, and I'm going to see what I need to do with Stan to make that happen quicker. That was the whole intent of this post.
That's freaking brilliant.
Yeah, we appreciate you kind of being transparent about that, sure. Because let's be honest, a lot of our audience are trying to build something similar to what you have.
Right.
And just because they're a consumer and maybe a customer of someone like you doesn't mean that they can't learn and turn around and do the same thing. So it's very, you know, reciprocating. Mm-hmm. But then it helps you and it helps them, and it's kind of it's very good. And you actually touched on a number of these traits in that answer. Mm-hmm. So for us to say systematic, let's just hit number two that you touched on,
right,
which is courage. Mm-hmm. And based on some of the comments on this post, mm-hmm. and Joe and I in round two, we set out to talk about all five of these, but we got into a little debate about the courage topic. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's talk about, is courage the most important one out of any of these five, or are we just, kind of right. looking at a surface level? Okay.
Courage is right at the top. I think a close second to courage is this whole notion of being systematic, which people are totally failing at in the blogging and blogging side of the business. But courage is really one of those things where you got to, put on your big girl pants and kind of get at what you're trying to get done. Okay. So courage for me, how I define it, is that, yes, it's probably going to make you sick in your stomach to publish a blog post. It's going to be nerve wracking to ask an influencer if you can guest post for them. Okay. But you have to take that step anyway. You're not going to get killed blogging, okay? So just go out there and do it, and you'll realize that what you were afraid of hardly ever comes to pass, okay? So I've done some things that have just made me go, why in the heck did I do that? But I'm so happy that I did them. For example, there's a huge conference that I've been trying to speak at for 2 years, guys, and I've been on this person's blog. I've done everything I could to catch this influencer's attention and maybe get that invite, and I didn't get it. So finally, one Saturday morning, I wrote this guy an email that says, listen, I've done this. I have a book. I have a blog that gets 20,000 people. I've been selling your product as an affiliate. Why am I not getting any love? All right. And the guy gets back with me in 2 hours and says, Stan, thanks for contacting me. Do you want to speak at my conference?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you just got to have that courage. I looked at my wife and went, I probably torched my relationship with this guy, you know, but it was important. That's courage in my mind.
Well, very cool. By the way, what conference is that?
Social Media Examiners Conference in San Diego next year.
Very cool. Congratulations. We're a big fan of Michael Stelzner, and he's a past guest. So that's awesome. Congrats on that.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
And very patient.
Yeah, definitely. Well, good. I'm glad that worked out. But let me ask you on this whole courage thing, mm-hmm. because, you know, the people's worst fears, everyone has these worst fears, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had an instance where this courage maybe either backfired on you, or, you know, maybe your fears did come to pass? And then if so, what did you do to kind of rebuild that courage, you know, after you've kind of been traumatized by that?
You know, I have to say that the fear that I have had, I've always had these fears that I'm going to write something and somebody really smart is going to jump on my comments section and say, you're a total idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. This is how You know, I've always had that fear. I still have that fear. I mean, like I explained in the post, it only shows up for maybe a millisecond these days, but I still have that fear. And I have to say, I know this sounds arrogant as all get out, guys, but I haven't had a situation where it's backfired. I really believe that fortune favors the bold in this regard. So, and even if, you know, I've had situations where I've gone out and I've written blog posts that I felt like was going to really ignite, you know, my audience and really take me to the next level, that totally bombed. You know, I've had my fair degree of those, but nothing has really backfired on me.
Well, I want to go into your mindset a little bit, because you said when you reached out for that conference, you say you probably torched that relationship with that person, but where like usually you hear people that say, hey, no matter what you do, don't burn any bridges because you may need that bridge later. So what's your thought process for making that decision to say, okay, this may burn this bridge, but I'm going to make this decision?
Right. Well, you know, here's the thing about it is that I'm always respectful of the person I'm dealing with. And even in that situation, I understand that I'm the one coming with hat in hand. Right. So I'm going to be respectful. I am not going to, you know, be disparaging, have sour grapes. You know, I'm just going to come in there and be a gentleman about it. So that's my tone. Okay. But I did want to understand, what did I need to do so I wasn't spinning my wheels for another 2 years. So I think that's important. I believe that if you're respectful and you know what you're talking about, then people are going to respect that. You know, my dad always told me that the people you meet on the way up are probably going to be some of the people you meet on the way down. So take care of everybody, you know? And I've had my fair amount of readers, you know, that, you know, write me really nasty emails, and I have to kind of swallow what I want to say and kind of go, God bless, best of luck to you, you know, and move on from there. So, you know, from in that regard, I mean, like, that's really my only one rule there. I'm not going to, when I say torch the relationship, I kind of felt that if this guy takes it the wrong way, or if Michael is not mature, if I catch him on the bad day, you know, this could be the end of it. That's what my thought process was, but that's not Mike. You guys know him, so.
Take that risk.
Yep, you got to. Got to.
Well, kind of speaking on this whole risk topic and sticking to the courage, Joe and I, that's actually the one that we focused on the most in round two. And it actually broke down into a conversation of maybe what courage means. And one of the things that we discussed, and Joe and I disagreed a little bit, was this idea of showing some vulnerability in your blog post.
Yeah.
And we know a lot of bloggers are coming out and almost putting more emphasis on their failures than their successes.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's building up their credibility or something like that. Is this something that you're teaching your students to do? Or do you think there could be some maybe backfire or something bad with showing too much failure or showing too little? What are your feelings on this?
I have like a very specific principle or code. I try to uplift my readers. Okay. I want my readers walking away from each one of my blog posts going, hell yeah, I can get this done. All right. And if I kind of go in there and I leave them with this thought of, wow, it's a tough world out there. Let's see how we can get this done. I've been hit on the chin too. I don't really see you going out and just kind of attacking the world from that posture. Okay. So that's just not my thing. I am not a glass half empty kind of guy. So I don't like doing that. I like to tell my students that your readers are looking to you to lead and to dream for them. Okay. So if you're going to be vulnerable, that's cool, but you got to turn that around. Okay. This can't become a whiny fest, because what will happen is that you will attract whiners. And then they're going to start getting into your comments. They're going to start infecting your community. And before you know it, you have a bunch of people who are progressively dragging the bar lower for your audience. And I'm not into that. And I've seen that happen. I've had two blogs before Pushing Social where I kind of followed these rules of thumbs by the experts, so to speak, and it just didn't work. And one of them was this, woe is me, you know, see people as your peers. And I'm just like, kind of like, no, I decided not to do it that way. With Pushing Social, it's I'm out ahead of the group. okay? And I'm telling you what I've learned, but make no mistake, I'm going for it, okay? And follow me, you know? So that's just my tone I set with my blog. It's working for me.
Yeah, and even on your about page, you specifically say, like, you're taking an optimistic approach. Yeah. Like, you come out and say, I'm sharing the good things. I'm sharing these happy thoughts.
Right.
So do you not see any value in kind of building a little bit of credibility through saying, hey, you know, if you fail, I've been there, or like, here's a mistake I made in the past. Here's what I'm doing now to fix it. But, but you don't seem to do a lot of that.
No.
But do you see some value in doing that, or is it just completely off limits to you?
No, I see some value in doing it. If you turn it around, if you make that pivot, right? So I think that they need to understand that I make mistakes. They also need to understand that I'm not staying there. You know what I'm saying? Or I'm getting some strength from the fact that I made that mistake and I've learned a solution, you know? And I think that you got to provide both sides of that equation. Okay. So I really think that you establish rapport with vulnerability, but you establish credibility with success. Okay. So it's a lot easier to kind of go in there and say, I've been where you've been at, right? And I've been down this road and I understand how you feel. That's rapport. That's, hey, listen, let's sit down and have a beer. Okay. But when I say, here's what I did, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's when people start reaching for their wallet. Okay. And they want you on their team. They want you to be their coach. So you got to balance both of those out.
So do most of the customers that you get, do they each have sort of the same type of problems that you help them with, or are each kind of at different levels of, well, some people, they've been blogging forever and now you're helping them, or most are a lot of beginners, or how does that breakout work?
Yeah. You know, I guess with any distribution, I get a fair amount of people who are in that middle zone. So they've been blogging maybe for a year. They're not seeing the success they want. They're not seeing that time and energy they're investing in their blog really translating into revenue, or translating into leads, or translating into authority, okay, in their niche. So they're trying to figure out what they're doing wrong. So I'm kind of this guy who comes in and says, let me talk to you for 15 minutes. And usually I can say, oh, that's where you're going wrong, you know, and I'm able to move them in a better direction from that standpoint. So I would say most of my customers are novices. So I do have a fair amount. I usually have 15 clients at any one time, and I would say about 5 of them are other bloggers. That I see a lot of my guidance kind of showing up in blog posts, you know, to their readers. But you know, I do have that mix.
Well, that time limit that you mentioned, if they've been blogging a year or so, that kind of goes into patience. And you said it took you 10 years to figure out how to make 1,000 online. So what's the timeline that you say to your clients that, okay, after you have to wait 3 years before you take off, or is there a timeline you give them?
Yeah. You know, I tell my clients that if they follow what I suggest, then we're looking at 6 months to a year. The reason why it took me so long, guys, is because I literally started doing the online marketing thing back in 1996. Okay. So from there, I mean, like, I tried everything. So I had, unfortunately, my path took me through all the stuff that doesn't work, you know, before it got to me to a point where it's like, I was able to start to put it together. When I talk to my clients, I say, you're going to be making money in 6 months. But what that means is that you're going to be very aggressive in building your blog audience today. You're going to write your first product, or you're going to find something to sell, or we're going to create something for you to sell within the next 30 days. So we can spend the next 2 to 3 months figuring out what will work and what will not work. And I find that a lot of people who are not making money, for example, with blogging, or they're not seeing their business benefit, is because they're kind of scared to really start trying the tactics required to start to make money, for example, or to start to grow their email list quicker. So I think you can accelerate that. That's why I tell people to pay for speed, you know, so get a good coach, listen to people that really can help you out, like you guys, and you can move along that path faster.
So if these people don't have a platform, you're still trying to get them to have a product up and going within 30, 60 days?
Yeah, yeah, I do. You know, because I haven't come up with a good definition of when do you have a platform, right? I know someone who has about 5,000 people on their email list and they can't get a sale, you know, and I think somebody would say that that's probably a platform. You know, they got those folks somehow. So what I tell people is, number one, you have to have great content, number one, to start attracting readers, subscribers, things that get turned into revenue at a later point. And I believe that you're going to have a lot of things that don't work. And I try to get people to start working on finding the things that don't work as quickly as possible. And during that process, they find their voice, they find a couple of tactics that work really well for them, and then they can start scaling from that. And that's just been the formula that has worked for me and my clients.
Well, one of the things on patience you mentioned is kind of sticking to it and keep creating content.
Yeah.
Because eventually, hopefully, people will come around, and then some of the blogs you've written, they kind of build that foundation for what your blog is and who you are. And then maybe there's a chance to either repurpose content or, you know, maybe an ebook you've already made will actually catch on and either become viral or people will start signing up for it. Mm-hmm. But at what point do you realize, okay, this is not going to work. I need to pivot, or I need to just cut ties and start over, because, you know, too much patience could be a bad thing.
You're right. You're right. Seth Godin has a great book called The Dip, where in that book, he pretty much gives you kind of like that outline of when to cut bait and run. You know, I say that, number one, if you feel like a hypocrite writing your blog posts, then you probably need to cut bait and run. Okay. The second thing is that if you can't, or you don't, if you really feel like your readers are not on board with your point of view, okay, you can probably flog this point of view forever. But if people are just not gravitating to it, then that's probably another situation you need to cut bait and run. If you get your product out there and you have your content out there, and after 6 months to a year, you're not seeing anyone, any traction, meaning that you're not getting subscribers, you're not getting influencers who want you to guest post on their blog or to come on their podcast or what have you. If you're not getting any bites, then it might be a time to pivot. I know I had to pivot 3 or 4 times before I finally found that sweet spot where I'm doing well in.
Stan, I got to jump in and say that I noticed that your terminology moved to cut bait and things like that. So you can definitely see the fisherman coming out in you.
I get all of my, everything I learned about marketing, I learned from fishing. So finding largemouth bass, yeah, that's taught me a lot.
That's hilarious. Well, for someone who just started out and they've only been going for 36 days and you're saying, okay, you don't have a platform, but I want you to start building a product to start selling. How do they know where to start since they don't have an audience to kind of get a problem from?
Their audience is out there. They got to go find them. And usually their audience is sitting on somebody else's blog. Okay. So, for example, I mean, like, and this guy is so huge that, you know, I don't make a dent in his numbers, but I learned a lot. I stole a lot of Brian Clark's copy blogger audience. Right. And I stole a lot of Mike Stelzner's audience and a lot of Jay Baer's audience, you know, because I watched them. I saw what, you know, copy blogger talks about online marketing and copywriting, right? They're not going to talk about the mental side of blogging, you know, or they're not going to dig into the methodology of writing, you know, a category page for your blog. That's where I excel. Okay. So my audience wasn't on my blog initially, but I was able to find some of the questions that were unanswered in other people's audiences. Okay. And then I started this process, you know, and in the case of getting on copy blogger, I, you know, I've guest posted on copy blogger. It took me a year to even get their attention. You know, it's part of the process, you know? And then when I got that first guest post and commenting and whatever, that attracted that audience to my blog, and I was able to build from there. So you just have to do research. If they're not on your blog, you have to go out there where they are at and ask questions, keep your ear to the ground, and figure out what you can do, what you can, what problem you can solve there. For example, just to really quickly here, I mean, like, I must have spent $150 a month on forum, private forum memberships, simply just to get to the really vocal and very influential part of copy bloggers' audience and pro bloggers' audience, just to see what they were talking about and what wasn't being satisfied. And then I rolled that all up into my editorial schedule. So that's how I initially built, you know, my first 100 visitors, my first 1,000 visitors from there.
Yeah, I was about to say that technique that you were talking about is one of the techniques we talked about in, you know, your blog post about building 100, your first 100 followers or gaining your first 100 followers in that forum.
Right.
Post. So we'll relink to that blog post in the show notes of this one. Mm-hmm. But I want to move on to the fourth trait that you talk about, and that's being systematic. And we've talked about this one already. But one of the interesting things I found that you mentioned in this was that all the other four traits you can kind of either learn or teach yourself, or maybe you inherently already have. But being systematic is something that you maybe need a coach or someone to show you how to do it. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about why that trait is different than the others?
Yeah, because you need perspective, right? You need somebody who's going to come and look at your process from the outside, okay, and see and be objective about it. I find that when I start working with a person and they tell me how they've gone about blogging, and they are so, they're in a rut, you know, they're kind of, you know, caught in the weeds, all right, and they don't, and they need me to kind of go in there and say, hey, listen, do you know that I just ran your Google Analytics numbers, and those 10 posts that you say you loved and that were great posts, they were actually your worst posts. Did you know that? You know, do you know that, you know, your number one keyword, you're only getting 10, there's only 10 searches per month in that keyword? You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, you need somebody to kind of come in and give you that perspective. And you also, and like, that's a negative side, but you need to come in and says, hey, you know, listen, you have a really unique voice. You know, you do really good when you have a specific problem you're trying to answer. Have you thought about writing blog posts that way? Or instead of writing a 120-page novel that you're trying to sell to a publisher, why don't you break that up into, you know, 10 smaller pieces that we can give away as content, you know? So you need somebody to kind of come in there, take a look at what's working, what's not working, and rework the pieces.
You know, it sounds like a little bit of this is as much having a second set of eyes on it as much as is an expert. But I mean, I guess when you combine the two, it's even better.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I like to tell my clients is that I can see around corners for them. You know, so if a person is kind of running down a path and they absolutely believe that, you know, they're going to make an impact by writing 200 word posts every 3 weeks, I can say, okay, let's play that out, because I know 5 other people who had that exact same strategy and it didn't work for them for these reasons. Do you think that, you know, look at your situation, are you demonstrably different? And they go, well, Stan, no, I hate you. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, let's go that route. So really is the expert portion of that is the ability to say, not only is this the problem, but here's 3 or 4 ways of solving that problem, you know? And then the second pair of eyes is just being able to come from the outside and see what's going on from a fresh perspective.
Well, one of your tactics for writing, like, I don't know, a viral post or whatnot, is you talk about recent events and then you kind of tie that into stuff you've done before. Yeah, you had some word about that, some phrase that you used. So could you explain that for our audience?
Yeah, the pop culture mashup is, number one, you find an event or a celebrity topic that is out there. Okay. And what you do is you take that topic and you relate it to a key principle in the subject area that you are blogging in. So my first pop culture mashup post was Lady Gaga's Spectacular Guide to Blogging. Okay. And so obviously at that point in time when I wrote that post, Lady Gaga was just super popular. She was just being applauded for her social media acumen. Okay. And I took her, you know, I took that story and I actually went and did research in Rolling Stone's articles. I was not a Lady Gaga fan. Okay. At all. And the only reason I wrote that post is because my wife made me watch the Glee Club, or Glee, I guess.
Yeah.
And they were singing her song and I was kind of like, oh my gosh, who's this Lady Gaga person? So I did some research and I felt like, wow, you know, she's really the shit these days. Sorry, guys, but you know, she's really it these days. And I did some research and I found that she did have some social media acumen. I was able to connect that with some core principles of, you know, writing a spectacular or having a spectacular blog. So that was the second piece. You got to connect the dots between that event and your subject matter.
So who makes that go viral? Is it, it's not search traffic, so people must already.
Yeah. What makes that go viral is, number one, you start to attract people that you normally wouldn't attract to your blog. Okay. And in my case, I attracted a lot of Lady Gaga fans, because what I did the next day after I posted that blog or published that blog, I went out and I found every Lady Gaga forum or chat or comment place where there was people were making comments about Lady Gaga. And I made a comment that was relevant to what was there ever they're talking about. And I threw in this statement, like I mentioned in my blog post. Okay. And that day I must have got maybe 500, 600 people over the course of 48 hours who came in, and they probably didn't stick around a long time, but they were curious about what does Lady Gaga have to do with blogging.
Yeah.
That was number one. Number two is that one of those people was a very popular freelance writer who was kind of back in that day, 2 years ago, she was really sought out to make these top blogger lists or the blogs or social media blogs you should check out. She happened to be a fanatical Lady Gaga fan. And she saw this blog post and she put me on one of her like top 10 lists. Right. And I'm on there with pro blogger and I'm like, oh my God, and that brought in a group of people. And then I mentioned it in a forum that I was a part of. That was Brian Clark's forum. And he goes, I read that post. I thought it was pretty good. And I was like, really? Why don't you retweet it? And he did. And he literally sent about 1500 people to my blog in an hour. It literally shut down my server. And it was incredible. So you could see how that kind of led to this chain of events where, you know, really I like to say that post kind of launched Pushing Social, because after that, then the traffic just started to climb from there.
Well, I think that the thought that Lady Gaga is kind of the one that you modeled this technique after, because mm-hmm. you did it once and then it worked for you. So obviously now you're telling people it works. Lady Gaga is one of the ones that we actually use on a podcast episode. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite conversations that Joe and I had about how to market yourself like Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's so out there and her techniques are so much different from everyone else's, but they seem to work. So if you can pick out the one best thing that she does, not only for blogging, but just marketing herself in general, what do you think that is that people can actually follow?
Well, she really encourages her people to take apart her content and republish it any way they want. And there's not some direct connections with a lot of people, but I think there's one thing that's important is that Lady Gaga encourages her fans to bring their cell phones to her concerts, right? And take video, take pictures and put them on their, you know, on their social media accounts. I think that's a great piece as well. Ironically, you know, I know I poo-pooed vulnerability earlier, but Lady Gaga is really vulnerable on her social media channels, you know, and I think that as a celebrity, the fact that people are feeling like, at least on the social media channels, they get to see another face of Lady Gaga, I think works because she is so popular. So I think that's another piece. And then the latest piece, and it's something that I think Justin Bieber does well, Kanye does well, is that they're just relentless. They're constantly creating content. For that matter, the author of Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling's.
Yeah.
She's relentless at making content that's just available to her best fans. You know, I think she has that community called Pottermore, and she just puts out exclusive backstory on characters in that community. And I do the same as Pushing Social. I have a group of people I call my homeboys.
Yeah.
And the homeboys I know because they have signed up for every single thing that I've done. They've retweeted me and I've kept track of them. And my homeboys always get free product, They get free coaching. I always retweet them. I always give them first crack at it if they want to guest post. I do what I can to get them out there. I've even helped some of them get guest post gigs at larger blogs, you know? Wow. So that's why I try to do is replicate that. And those people are my secret weapon. Those people really are the key to making pushing social go. So that's the way you can go about it. This is what I've learned anyway.
So how often should you write these, I guess, pop culture posts? Is it, it's, you don't want to be doing it every week. So how often should you do it?
You know what? The pop culture mashup, I only try to do that maybe once every 3 months, or if there's something that is really sensational out there that I want to jump on. But it is not something, you can't pull off a pop culture mashup every week. That's just way too hard to do, to make it relevant. And it's so unusual in terms of a blog template that people can kind of get tired of it, you know? So you really have to be careful when you use it. Personally, I use another blog template. I call it, you know, it's just a plain Jane generic template, which is problem solution application that 90% of my posts are written against. And then whenever I want to just kind of give a shot in the arm, you know, to my readers, I'll do a pop culture mashup.
Do you ever try, I know you guest post on like other blogging type sites, but do you ever try and get on, I guess, news media like Business Insider or Huffington Post or anything like that?
Yeah, and I've been trying for the last 3 years. I'm going to try for the next 3 years. It's a long you know, it's just one of those things. It's kind of like the more popular you become, the easier it is, you know. And a lot of people don't like hearing people like me say this, but it is a relationship game, you know. You have to know people to know people. That kind of gets you in those doors. And the best way is to build your social credibility, to build your capital. And that's by creating content, having a point of view, being consistent, being courageous, being systematic, that post, you know, those five traits. And over time, you know, just to give a practical example of this, when I started pushing social, I had two goals. One goal was to be an authority in social media. The second goal was to write a book. I thought it'd be so cool to have a book that was sold at Barnes & Noble. Okay? Those were my two goals. And I had no clue of how I was going to achieve those, but I was able to write a book because of the content and pushing social. My friend Mark Schaefer saw it. He says, "Stan, why don't we write a book?" I'm like, "I can write. I can write my butt off. But I don't know anybody at a publisher." He says, "No problem. You write it, I'll market it. You know, I'll find a publisher." And he only did that because he came to me one day. He called me up out of the blue on my cell phone and says, "You know, are you Stan Smith?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I thought I was a bill collector or somebody. And he was like, "Hey, I really love your stuff on your blog. Can we chat for a little bit?" I'm like, "Okay." Now I was afraid. I'm like, "Is this a stalker?" You know, and I was kind of excited. I was kind of like, "Wow, I have my first stalker. This is awesome." And I was talking to him, and he was just a really great guy. He says, "Anything I could do to help you out, let me know." And that's how the relationship started. But it started with that content, you know. It was something that he enjoyed. So he looked me up and led to a book deal, you know. So Huffington Post, you know, you need credibility. You know, any big publication like that, you need credibility. You need something for their editors and their producers to go back and say, "What is Stan Smith all about?" You know, and the more I have in that storehouse, the easier it will be. So that chance is coming. That opportunity is coming. I'm sure of it. You know,
well, Stan, we got to the four out of the five traits you talked about, and we'll have to let the listeners check out the show notes to head over to your post to find out about resilience, the fifth trait, and a little bit more about that. But where can they go to learn more about you and get in touch with you if they're interested in talking to you further?
Well, there's on Pushing Social. If you go up to the top there, there is a Work with Stan link there, and that will take you over to my services side. And I have dozens of ways that I can help, from consulting to, you know, helping you set up your Google Analytics the right way. You know, so have me, and I'm partnered up with a lot of good people out there that can help. So if you want to talk with me, head on over to pushingsocial.com/services or find that link up at top there that says work with Stan, and I'll hook you up.
Yeah, and I found it interesting when I visited that earlier. You do all kinds of things, everything from setting up categories in WordPress all the way to doing, you know, just everything. Yeah. It's like that all the way from the very basic to the full setup. So I think that's cool, because a lot of people won't necessarily help you with that, but you're willing to help everybody from start to finish if they need it.
Absolutely. I've been there.
Very cool. And that's what people like to hear, because everybody's been there, but only a few people want to talk and kind of help the people that are there. And a lot of people just want to do some top level things. So it's cool that you're willing to get down to the nitty gritty, so to speak, with your students. So that's awesome. Well, Stan, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks for coming on.
Hey, I had a great time. Thank you, guys.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.